Hello and welcome to the Investors Chronicle Companies and Market Show. I am John Heumann, editor of the Investors Chronicle, and I am joined today by Bradley Gerard, news editor. How are you doing, Bradley?
Very good, John. Thank you. Very good.
Good, good. Lots of news this week. Lots of exciting stories.
Plenty of things going on.
Yeah, really busy. In a rare visit to the office, Simon Thompson. How are you, Simon?
I'm very well, John, and I've been casting my eye across this fantastic feature you've written, or the company's team have written for this week's issue.
It's all my work.
Is it all your work? Okay. No credit to anyone else then.
So lots of interesting insights there that you're going to shed some light on, because obviously AIM is a happy hunting ground for you.
It certainly is. I've looked through the 50-odd companies that you've mentioned, and I've got some hopefully good advice for the readers on some of those companies. So.
Great. Okay. And hopefully dispelling too some of the myths that AIM is, as some of our friends would describe it, a cesspool of of skullduggery and incompetence and fraud and other such terrible goings on.
It's quite strong wording.
Yeah, well, not my words. So, I mean, AIM is a good market, and it's been a happy hunting ground for you. We're going to talk about that. It's the subject of this week's cover feature, the AIM 100, so we'll come to that very shortly. But let's start, Bradley, with the news. What we got?
Yeah, I guess a bit of a theme, I suppose, is activism upon by investors. Obviously, last week we had the big showdown at BP, and a very large proportion of investors showing their dislike about Bob Dudley's pay.
So what was it? It was an enormous pay rise, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a vast offered. Pay rise. It was $20 million. But yeah, I mean, not on quite the same scale of activism necessarily, but Lake House, which we've covered a little bit, there's a bit of activism by Slater Investments, which is run by Mark Slater.
Yeah, we know him well.
Yeah, exactly. He's a good fund manager. He had sort of pressured the board to enact some changes, mainly of its membership. And there was going to come down to a vote at the annual general meeting, but actually they've kind of agreed that they won't take it that far. They'll just Chris Geohagan, who is the non-executive chairman, is going to leave, and there are going to be some replacements added to the board. So yeah, you know, a bit of activism kind of winning out there, I suppose.
And this is a funny little sector, this. I mean, this is in sort of public sector housing maintenance type stuff.
Yeah,
Simon, you know, going back to your old company's editor days, it's a difficult place to do business. I mean, you'd think it's a money printing, you know, machine, but it's kind of tough.
I think it's balancing the margins that you actually earn on the business with the cash flow required to generate the profits, and it's a balancing act. Mm. And yes, you're right, a high percentage of companies just don't do it right.
No, it's a tricky one. I'd avoid it personally, but there you go.
Yeah, I think it's probably quite tough, especially with, you know, it's probably a very linked to sort of the government budgets as well, I guess, and how much they're supporting, you know, housing stock and that sort of thing.
So, absolutely.
Not a great sector. But sticking to the idea of activism, we also did another piece on stock spirits in the main news section.
Yeah.
And a few weeks ago, I spoke to them. They had their results, and I was speaking to their CFO, and they were talking about, you know, they'd enacted this kind of root and branch review of their operations in Poland, which is by far their largest market.
So, Stock Spirits, tell us what it does quickly.
They're a distiller, so they make things like vodka and other spirits.
How can you go wrong in Poland making vodka?
Exactly. Yeah, it's a good question. they're an Eastern European focused business. As I say, the bulk of their business is in Poland. And they had really been struggling in that country. So they'd enacted this review and come out with this something like a 12 kind of point plan to kind of change the fortunes there. And then when I looked at it, I just lost a bit of confidence, really. And the CFO was also saying that their M&A strategy hadn't quite worked up until now, so they were going to broaden it, and if they failed to find any companies to buy, they were going to return cash to shareholders, which on the face of it might sound good, but to me, I thought that would be a bit of a sort of acceptance of failure, really, if you can't find anything to buy. So you're just going to return cash. It's not always the best thing, really. On that, I kind of put them on a sell. And since then, this massive kind of ruction, I suppose, has erupted between Stock Spirits board and its largest shareholder, which is Western Gate Private Investments. Western Gate represents a man called Luis Amaral, who is also the chief executive of Eurocash, which is effectively a big kind of cash and carry type outlet in Poland. And Luis Amaral kind of actually had a fairly similar view to me, that the this review of the Polish operations wasn't good enough, and it probably wasn't going to lead to the results that he and the board would hope that it would. And so he has actually requisitioned the board, which means that at the AGM he'll be plumping for two non-execs to join the board. He was also plumping for the chief executive to be removed, and actually after two short weeks the chief executive has decided to take an early retirement, so make of that what you will. I mean, to me it seems like maybe Chris Heath, who was the chief executive, didn't want to bother with a fight, which might be fair enough. He's been at Stock Spirits about 8 years, I think it was, 55, so I guess, you know, maybe retiring now makes sense. But
hasn't been on the market that long though, has it?
No, it listed, I think it was 2014 or maybe late 2013 from memory. I mean, in a way, Western Gates and Mr. Amaral kind of have got their way partially already. You know, a new chief executive will have to be hired now that Mr. Heath has taken early retirement. And so we'll see in May. May 23rd is a new date for the AGM. It got pushed back because of this requisition by Western Gates. So, yeah, we'll see. It's an interesting one. I mean, I was speaking to an analyst last night, actually, and he was saying for him, At the price that Stock Spirits is trading at, we've been through about two or three profit warnings last year. He doesn't really think it could get too much worse now, and obviously it always can do. But from his view, he was saying he can't see how you wouldn't make money investing in Stock Spirits right now. I'm not so convinced.
Famous last words.
Exactly. I'm not so convinced yet, because if this vote at the AGM fails and these two non-executive directors aren't hired, then maybe the stock won't sort of respond very well. So I think it's just a bit too difficult to call at the moment.
I mean, the reality is, ballroom ructions aside, I mean, it's the trading that matters.
Yes, it is. And things have marginally improved in Poland in its Q1 update recently. But a big criticism of the company by Mr. Amaral is that their headquarters is in the UK. So he's criticised what he calls remote control management. So you've got the company whose the bulk of its activities are in Poland, yet it's based in Berkshire or something running the business, and he just does not see that as a good way to do things. And I guess potentially he's being proven right in if the recent trading is anything to go by.
Generally speaking though, I mean, activism is kind of something we kind of like. You've got lots of underperforming businesses. I mean, you know, something like Morrisons, for example. I mean, there were activists threatening, you know, to get involved there, or you know, who certainly did get involved to some degree, and
yeah,
it's kind of turning it around. I mean,
obviously, you have to, if you're an individual investor and there is a larger kind of shareholder that's being an activist, I guess you have to question their motives and ask yourself whether you want to be taken along for that ride. But yeah, I would say that you're probably largely right. I mean, activists, they want to make some money. That's usually their main sort of their main rationale. And as an individual investor in that company, I guess you probably do too. And if you agree with their points of view, then it's probably worth sticking in most of the time. I'm sure there'll be examples whereby that's not worked out very well, but usually I guess an activist would end up enacting some sort of change which maybe on the balance of probabilities ends up being positive.
No, I guess you've got a balancing act to weigh up, you know. The presence of an activist would suggest that a company's not doing so well.
Yes, but then again, maybe its presence could lead to things being implemented that make it become better.
Absolutely.
More quickly Absolutely. Than had they not been involved.
I'm pretty sure even Apple has had activists involved, you know. I mean, that's a huge company, and you know, no one can accuse Apple of being run badly, but activists have certainly enacted some change there, not least the return of cash.
Apple has such a cash-rich balance sheet that for years it was sitting on huge amounts of cash. And if you're a balance sheet-approached investor like myself and you analyse balance sheets, you think excess capital is not efficient, you're depleting the return on equity by having so much cash, excess cash, just return it. But for these big American companies, it's easier said than done, because a lot of that cash isn't actually in America. It's actually in overseas subsidiaries. So to get the cash back, there's tax implications. So it's not as clear cut as sometimes you think it could be.
Let's not go into the tax subject, because that's been a big issue in recent weeks, and it kind of we start getting into political territory with that. So let's not go there. Let's not go there. Well, having just said that, Brexit brouhaha, that's quite political.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was a bit split on this, but since Michael Gove told us we could all become like Albania, well, I don't know, maybe he's swung it for me.
Yeah, I'm signed up. Which side is he on?
He's meant to be on the Vote Leave campaign, but he's basically saying that Britain could have a relationship with the EU like someone like Albania does. And that's supposed to be kind of a carrot for this, you know, for the people who are undecided and therefore might want to vote Leave. It just seemed a bit of a strange example of a country to use.
He's a strange man, though. Well, go.
I guess so, yeah. I guess that's probably fair.
I doubt you find many teachers who have many good things to say about
My wife's a teacher and she does not. So.
Yeah, that's another matter altogether, the Academy programme, which we haven't covered in this week's magazine for obvious reasons. It's nothing to do with the stock market.
It might soon become so.
Well, it might do. It might do. You never know. You never know. But yeah, it is odd. We're going to cover this in a few weeks' time properly.
Yeah.
And I have had a few letters from readers saying, why haven't you done anything about Brexit? And I'm going to say the reason we haven't done anything about Brexit is because until the starting gun was fired on the referendum, which is in 8 weeks?
23rd of June.
We didn't really have a lot to go on. And I'm still not sure we have a lot to go on. I mean, you've got essentially two camps whose opinions of what Brexit means are poles apart. And well, I'm kind of just trying to get some what's true.
Yeah, I guess now you have this big Treasury paper. But beyond that, I mean, Vote Leave aren't really producing a sort of a counter dossier, as it were. So you're right, there isn't a lot to go on. And
Vote Leave are very cross, though, with this Treasury paper. Well, very cross.
They're going to be cross about anything that the Remain camp does, aren't they? Like paying for leaflets out of taxpayers' money, which is, you could argue, not very good form. But, you know, if the she was under the foot, I'm sure they'd do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so we are going to cover this properly in as much as we can, because I do think there are so many unknowns at this. I mean, you know, really kind of predicting what Brexit means is almost impossible. Almost impossible. One thing it does mean is a bit of uncertainty at the moment, but it doesn't really seem to have affected markets. I mean, they're flying at the moment, absolutely flying still.
Yeah, I think the FTSE hit sort of a year-to-date high, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's mad. It's mad.
Well, I think markets, you've also got to bear into consideration when they bottomed out in February, the oil price bottomed out, the copper price bottomed out. And I was looking at some of the charts yesterday for the major FTSE 100 miners and commodity stocks, and actually BlackRock World Mining Trust as well. That's a massive investment trust which holds shareholdings in Billiton and Rio Tinto. Interestingly, they've all broken out to the upside.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why the FTSE 100 has recovered 15-16% from those February lows, is because of the massive performance from these, or rebound in those mining stocks.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting, that breakout earlier this week.
Indeed. Well, in fact, going back to the activism thing, I think I read this morning in the FT there's going to be a bit of a brouhaha, there's a laugh at that word, at Anglo-American this week on subjects of pay, because these mining companies have done very badly, really.
Well, if you look at, say, for example, Anglo-American's share price, yes, it's close to £8 now, but 2 months ago, it was nearer £2. And 5 years ago, it was near 25 quid.
Mm.
So if you were a long-term shareholder in that company, dividends aside, you've been massacred in terms of your investment, which begs the question, what were the management doing to get you into this situation that saw their share price decimated 80-90% within 5-6 years?
Yeah, certainly not earning bumper pay packages. And in fact, I mean, just looking ahead to the AIM feature in the introduction, which I wrote, a rarity for me to do any actual feature writing, I looked at the performance of the AIM basic materials sector, which is the closest proxy we have for mining, and the FTSE mining sector. And even AIM's miners have outperformed the major miners on the main market. I mean, that's extraordinary. They have really done very badly indeed.
But as I said, the rebound in the oil price is interesting.
Mm.
If that holds, not just for the profitability of these big miners and oil companies, but also for risk aversion, which you've seen with the rally in stock prices, but also in the credit markets. So a lot of factors are operating at the moment, driving the market upwards. And that's why the Brexit argument has gone to one side. But I think as we get nearer to that 23rd of June date, at least for the UK stock markets, you're going to see a lot of uncertainty.
Absolutely. While we're on the subject of mining, I'm going to turn quickly to the tip updates page, because we have an update from Hochschild Mining, which is a precious metal miner. We tipped that a month ago. It's up 58%. Wow. That's pretty spectacular.
That's calling it right.
It is. I mean, the gold and silver. I mean, you know, they don't follow the normal rules of kind of the industrial metal miners, but something interesting going on here.
There is, and there's other examples as well. Our colleague Mark Robinson put readers into Ferro Petroleum about 2 months ago. Lots of caveats on it. I think the stock price was around about 45 pence. Price today, 73 pence. So again, 50% plus return in a couple of months, leverage play on the oil price. Yeah, something's happening here.
Absolutely. You mentioned the oil price in 7 days this week, Doha.
Yep.
Let's talk about that quickly.
People have kind of been, well, the market, I guess, have been pinning some sort of hope that this big meeting in the Qatari capital would lead to some sort of agreement about a bit of a supply freeze to help get the oil market back in a bit of equilibrium, I suppose. But unfortunately, the fact that Saudi Arabia and Iran seem very, very far away from having a civilized conversation with one another doesn't look like we're going to be there anytime soon.
Not really a surprise.
Not a surprise, no. And obviously, I mean, Iran's ability to pump the amount of oil it has wanted to has been sort of curtailed in recent years because of the sanctions. You know, Iran is arguably back in the fold now in terms of the international community's view of it. And, you know, it wants to get back up to its level of oil production that it was prior to the sanctions, which seems perfectly fair enough, really, from an outsider's perspective. You know, they're probably thinking, why should Saudi Arabia have it all its own way? So, it's put a bit of a ceiling on the rise in the oil price at the moment. But, I mean, as Simon says, I mean, you know, it has still come a long way, the oil price, since its lows that weren't too far behind us now. So, while this is a bit of a negative thing, there does seem to be a bit of a sense of recovery in the oil and commodity prices. And also, just touch upon very briefly the piece that is leading our news section this week about emerging market stocks as well. They've outperformed sort of the MSCI World and the FTSE 100 by quite a rate, really, year to date. And that's kind of another kind of high risk, arguably high risk play. And emerging market stocks and those stocks listed on the FTSE who have a big proportion of business in emerging markets have done very, very well year to date. So there's potentially chiming with that argument that you made, Simon, that this kind of risk aversion maybe is coming off a little bit and people are feeling a little bit braver.
I'd agree. And I'd also go back to the fact that the credit markets send out signals. Bond investors generally react before equity investors. And some of the distress that we saw 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago, has dissipated. And that's one of the reasons that you've seen easier conditions in equity markets as risk aversion falls away.
Absolutely. I mean, I guess as well, I mean, the point to make is that when sentiment is bad, things tend to get oversold as well.
They do. I mean, it's psychology of investors. It's people panic, make knee-jerk reactions. The psychological loss of making a loss on your investment is far greater than the psychological gain of making a profit. And as a result, people generally overreact to the downside and quicker as well. So you see sharp falls in a very short space of time, whereas the gains take longer to accumulate.
Mm. Well, turning to the new spotlight, though, I mean, this is a banking story, ostensibly, but it's also a commodity story, too.
It is, yeah. We've had a look at the largely sort of skewed towards the US banks at the moment because they've just gone through their sort of Q1 reporting season. But yeah, Emma Powell has looked at the exposure of some of the US banks to the sort of oil and gas sector in terms of the amount that the banks there have lent to this sector and the sort of basically the buffers that the banks having to put in place to make sure that they don't really lose out on these loans. So the amount of money they're putting aside to just in case we don't get paid back on these loans, that amount of money is growing for quite a few of the big US banks. So it's an interesting piece. It's definitely worth having a read.
And her question is, you know, is this going to come here?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which is a very valid question. And HSBC did actually kind of flag this a little bit in their recent results. We think the other UK banks are a little less exposed than the US banks. And we're probably going to take another look into this actually to kind of answer our question once the sort of first set of banking results starts to come through a bit more.
But really, HSBC, Standard Chartered, which are the two UK banks, UK listed banks we mentioned here, they're also massively exposed to emerging markets as well. So
they are. Yeah.
They're benefiting from the trend that you spoke of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
A few minutes ago.
Yeah, those two are a bit exposed. But yeah, not quite as much as the US banks. But yeah, it's definitely worth a read, that piece, and an interesting link between, as you say, commodities and the banking sector.
Well, there's plenty more news. If we went through it all now, we'd be here till midnight.
We'd be here for a very long time.
Let's turn to the A100, which, incredibly, over the last 12 months, is the best performing of the UK broad-based indices. it's beaten the FTSE 100, it's beaten the All Shares, beaten the 250. I mean, you know, a great performance. And as I said earlier, Simon, this really kind of belies the view that certain people have presented of the AIM market as a speculator's paradise. It's done quite well.
I think what people tend to forget is that there are a lot of small companies in the UK that are world leaders.
Mm.
And I say small, but some of these AIM companies have got market capitalizations near £500 million at the top end of the AIM 100.
Well, this week we're looking at the bottom half, sure. The 100 to 51. But I mean, it's still quite big. We're only sort of 150, 200 million up.
Well, exactly. And the point about it is that a year ago, for example, Burford Capital, a company I've written up today, and it's on the website, and it's an IC tip, it's live. It was in the bottom half of the AIM 100 12 months ago.
Mm.
Share price has doubled since. It's performing amazingly well. It's a world leader in providing capital for legal cases, litigation cases. Generates return on capital employed of 28% year on year on year. And in terms of investors, it's not just equity investors that have done well. It's had retail bonds listed on the London Stock Exchange.
They had a new one quite recently.
They had a new one earlier this week. They raised £100 million at 6.1%. Now, if you want a home for your income, or you're looking for a home for your capital, that's not a bad return from a world leader in its field that makes such chunky returns on its capital.
Quick question, because they're not the only one doing this. Juridica is the other one. It's not been so rosy there, has it?
Oh, Juridica is one of the bargain shares for 2016 that I included in my portfolio 10 weeks ago. The shares are up 39% as of today.
Okay, I take it back. last year was not a great year for them. I guess you've picked it at the right moment then.
It was stock picking, John, yes.
Stock picking. Yeah. That's why we pay you the big bucks.
Thank you, John.
So anyway, AIM. I look at this list of these top 100 companies, of which we cover 50 this week. You know, there's lots of companies you'd recognise, you know, as, you know, even if you weren't an investor, you'd recognise these companies. These are solid businesses.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm looking at the list at the moment. And for example, SafeStyle UK floated on the AIM market December 2013. Shares have doubled since. We've had it on a buy, and I followed it since the flotation.
Windows.
It's the UK's leader in replacement windows. That's what it does, but it does it very well. You probably see the adverts on TV offering 0% interest-free credit for 2 years.
I need some new windows, actually. Give me a call.
well, seemingly, they're 20% cheaper than most rivals because The scale of the operation, they can do that. And also they're returning cash to shareholders. They've got a special dividend next month, plus the ordinary dividend. You can pick up roughly 13 pence against a share price of £2.80 in dividends if you buy before mid-June.
I mean, that's quite an interesting point that I mentioned in the introduction. Looking through the list of the top 100, three quarters of them pay a dividend. I mean, that's quite substantial. That's, you know, this is not a necessary, you know, just a growth, speculative growth index. These are sometimes, in many cases, income plays as well.
They've have solid balance sheets, cash generative, and that cash flow covers not just last year's dividends, but possibility of progressive dividends in years to come.
Mm.
I'm looking at the list at the moment, and another one is Epwin, which does things like dormer windows and mouldings for roofs and things like that. Interestingly, the broker that floated that was Zeus Capital. They floated SafeStyle, and both shares have done very, very well. And another company they recently floated, which I wrote up a couple of weeks ago, was Watkin Jones Group.
Never heard of them.
Provider of student accommodation.
Which is a subsector we like a lot.
And, well, I think I had a look at the 132-page admission document and broker's note that went to about 85 pages.
I hope you didn't print it out, Simon.
I did. You'll be getting the bill for the paper very shortly.
Yeah, and the new printer as well.
Absolutely. But the point is that if you followed the right broker for the flotations of these companies, the chances are you're going to be onto a winner.
So we like Zeus, do we?
I like Zeus a lot. I've only had one company that's blown up with Zeus out of seven I followed.
Interesting. Zeus, are they listed? Or are they,
no, yeah? They're not listed. They're led by a gentleman called John Gould, who's the chief exec, who's formerly an investment banker with Arden Partners.
Okay. That is interesting. I mean, that's an interesting insight there. You're backing people there as much as... as stories.
I'm backing the reputation of the firm to pick out the right companies and turn away the dross and yes, there is DROS and AIM. Let's make no mistake about it. Mm. There is DROS. But if you can actually get rid of that and actually focus on the decent companies and the brokers that actually followed those decent companies, then you improve the chances of having a profitable outcome on your investments. Another one there is Manx Telecom. That's a live IC buy tip. Shares floated just over 2 years ago. They're up about 50%. It offers a 5% dividend yield. It's rock solid.
But worth checking if you're an investor in AIM shares anyway.
Absolutely. And I think one of the reasons why the AIM index has done so well is the ability to produce a decent dividend and underpinned by cash flow. And as you said, 3/4 of these companies actually pay dividends.
I was flabbergasted by that statistic, actually. I mean, it's really impressive. And actually, looking at my numbers here again, I think it was about, I mean, a fair number of them are beating the kind of average dividend yield of the FTSE 100. I mean, it's, you know, these are, in some cases, producing serious income.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm looking through this list at the moment. And another one, which is the live IC buy tip, Bathnet Banking is about to pay a special dividend.
Not at the greatest year, looking at that.
It's not at the greatest year, but interestingly, the shares have rallied quite strongly after last month's results. Mm. I think as investors reappraise the prospects for Arbuthnot.
I mean, I think our view here is that, I mean, because they own this big stake in Secure Trust, which is doing very well.
Sure.
And that's in the top half of the AIM 100. And I think the view we have is that actually there's a lot of that business that the market is ignoring. So they're looking at the Secure Trust stake, but not the rest of it, which is actually doing really well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, our Arbuthnot Private Bank makes £7 million operating profit.
I mean, and this goes back to this idea that actually within AIM, you've got these stories where, because they're not massively well covered by the analyst community, you've got aspects of the businesses that are being overlooked.
Oh, and to give you a prime example, looking at this list, the one that sticks out at the moment to make a very positive return over the next 3 months, irrespective of Brexit or market fluctuations, has got to be LXB Retail Properties. This is a company that's in the process of winding itself up. It's got a March 2017 deadline to do so. It's basically built a whole load of retail shopping centres. It's pre-sold them to the likes of the Crown Estate and other fund managers. And as soon as the shopping centres are ready to be passed on to those new owners, the company books the profits and it's going to return the cash to shareholders. Mm. And I've been running through the numbers on this, and I reckon this company's net asset value, which was 103 pence last September, share price is 97, is going to be roughly 120 as of today. And I reckon net cash on its balance sheet by the end of June this year is going to be close to 40 pence a share.
Mm. So we're looking at, you know, share price performance over 1 year, not particularly spectacular, but this is a return of capital story here, and it's a great one.
And I think you could easily make a 20% return on your capital over the next 8-9 months in this stock with very little downside risk, yeah, given all these pre-sale agreements that are going to come to fruition in the next few months.
Yeah, good. Another one that you've done well on is KBC Advanced Technologies, which, so our list was one company short. This year, the AIM 99, unfortunately, because KBC didn't last long enough to throughout a sort of production cycle for this issue, which takes a lot of work and a long time, which I'm sure you can testify to, Bradley.
Absolutely.
So it didn't last long enough to actually have a share price by the time we went to press. But this is one you picked out.
I picked that one out 2-3 years ago, and 69 pence, I remember the price.
69p.
And it was taken out at just over
210.
Was it 210?
210. So
that's a 200% return, excluding dividends. And again, that's a British success story. They do some really smart software to improve the efficiency for oil companies for refining and things like that. And especially in these cost-conscious times, oil companies want to look to save money wherever they can, but improve their efficiency, and so much so that KBC was bought out by a rival.
Yeah, but I looked at this one because I thought, you know, it's in the oil and gas equipment sector, essentially, in the subsector. You know, it's going to be bombed out. That's why it's got bought. But I looked at the share price, and it's been one way.
It has, because people, and I've been banging the drum for this one for the last 12 months, that it's all down to refining margins. And there's something called the West Coast crack spreads. Mark Robinson will know this very well from his time in the oil
industry. I'll ask him later.
but they've been at multi-year highs. Mm. And that is seriously good news for a company that does software for the refining industry. And because its client base are making bumper profits. So they can afford to actually buy the software and out-license it, etc.
I mean, that's to kind of suggest that, you know, you should be, you know, very kind of picky when you're looking at a subsector. You know, don't write off the whole oil equipment sector, because actually you've got to really look in detail at the companies within it and what they're specifically doing to really understand where the opportunities lie. And actually that kind of suggests that some companies can offer good value because they've been unfairly sold down.
Totally. And one of the cases you brought up earlier was Juridica. Mm. Terrible year last year. Yes, they had write-downs, all the rest. But at the price, when I saw it in the bargain share portfolio 2 months ago, it was trading on about 60% below book value. It had cash on the balance sheet and a decent likelihood of some of those legal cases having a successful outcome. And the risk rewards favoured a very profitable outcome. And that's what's happened. Mm. And as I say, looking at that list, LXB Retail sticks out like a sore thumb at that price.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. Brad, I mean, you contribute a few to this one, and obviously next week's. Any standout AIM 100 constituents for you?
Well, it's a tough one. I mean, I think there are fewer of my ones in this half. I've got more next half, but I guess, interesting, because I saw an update.
You can give us a bit of a preview
morning.
If you like.
Oh, I don't want to give things away, John.
All right. I think everyone knows who's in the top 50.
They might not. I've just seen MP Evans's name in the list this week. And they actually released a statement this morning, which is why I kind of jumped out at me, I suppose. They're mainly a palm oil producer, but they've also got interests in Australian beef, like cattle herds. Mm-hmm. And it's that beef cattle herd side that has been a saviour, I suppose, last year, particularly because palm oil prices were very depressed. But there was a statement this morning from the company saying that it was just acknowledging some press speculation in Australia that MP Evans is going to sell its stake in NAPCO, which is the business that it has a position in for the Australian beef. And I guess if it does sell that, it'd be very interesting, because the beef side of things has been very, very profitable for the company, even though it doesn't have a majority stake in NAPCO. So if it does sell it, then it would just be pretty much exclusively palm oil. It's got some very, very small Malaysian property investments, I think. But yeah, palm oil has been an interesting one. It's worth people having a look at the share price chart, or the price chart of it online. It completely plummeted last year, but already this year, well, it looks a bit like something like gold or oil. It's just flying right back up again. So maybe it would make sense then to sell this this beef interest, given where beef prices are. They're very, very high at the moment. So a sale could be on the cards, but the board stresses that it's reviewing all of its options, from selling to trying to buy the rest of the stake that it doesn't already own, or at least a bit more.
It's been around a long, long time, MP Evans.
It's
a well-established group. And I mean, that's the other thing, you know, notable thing about a lot of these AIM. There's a lot of new companies that have been around relatively short amount of time. But there's a lot have been around for a very long time indeed. You know, one of yours that's not in this list, that'll be next week, Nichols.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a wonderful company. Love that company.
Yeah, exactly.
And I know you shouldn't fall in love with shares, but Nichols is a brilliant company.
Yeah, maker of Vimto. Yeah. They've got a fair bit of their sales come from overseas, which could be very helpful in the coming years if this sugar levy announced by Mr. Osborne does come to fruition. But yeah, as you say, they've got some fairly kind of strong brand. I mean, Vimto is obviously a very, very old, well-known brand. And
Vimto, when I was a teenager, I used to go over the golf course in the summer holidays, and I'd go around the show, and they used to sell it in big, it's a third extra free. So Vimto got me around the golf course and got me down to the low 80s. So thanks, Nichols.
So that's why you like it so much. Finally laid your cards on the table. So as you say, it's a good company. They made a couple of small acquisitions recently. And yeah, it just seems to be a well-run business that keeps chipping away. As I said, the sugar tax thing will be a problem for it and all of its rivals potentially. How much, we will see. I mean, all of these companies have sugar-free or low-sugar versions now. So
yeah, and actually, there's another company that previewing next week that Mr. Bearball talks about this week, which is Fevertree. Now, they're in the top 50.
Yeah.
Huge company, massive share price growth over the past year. Obviously, interesting challenges posed to them by the sugar tax. Well, I mean, this is another extraordinary AIM success story.
I mean, it's extraordinary. Yeah, we were talking about this before the podcast, actually, with Mark and Simon as well. And I cover it, and I had it on a... It was on a buy for a while, and Mark said, "Oh, I think you should put it to hold." Like, it's a bit.
He's bottled it.
No, but I carried
Excuse
on.
The pun.
I carried on, but I had to. I bottled it recently and put
you
it on
bottled
hold.
It.
Yeah, I put it on hold. It has gone up so much, and while I'm still very bullish on it, just the rating is very, very, very high. But in its favour. It's very asset light. It doesn't have. It outsources things like bottling and that sort of thing. So it's effectively. A very shrewd marketing business that happens to sell drinks in a way. So it's kind of, it doesn't have the onerous problems of looking after factories, that sort of thing. It's a very, very kind of modest business that's doing very, very well, very popular. It's doing very well in all the supermarkets. Could it be bought out? I don't know, who knows? I mean, it's a bit expensive probably at the moment, but I don't know what your views are on it, Simon.
When I last looked at it, I don't know what the share price at the moment is, but I fell off my chair when I saw that the rating was almost 30 times earnings. And, you know, that's an earnings yield of 3.3%. And in order to justify that for any company, you've got to not just have double-digit growth in earnings year on year, you've got to have high double-digit growth going out 5 years. Is it possible? Yes. Personally, it's... Is there a possibility that there's another fever tree out there? I mean, fever trees come from nowhere, and it's just my own view, but these brands emerge, they do very well, very profitable, and then another big giant comes along and launches another brand, and all of a sudden, it's the new in thing.
Mm. Well, this is what Beowulf talks about. He calls it the Katy Perry effect.
Okay.
Which has baffled everybody at the magazine this week, but I think he's got a point, is that fever tree... becomes popular and everyone drinks it because everyone else is drinking it. For some reason, he's equated this to Katy Perry because apparently everyone buys Katy Perry records because other people buy Katy Perry records. But I can safely say I've never bought a Katy Perry record.
No, ditto.
I can safely say I don't have a record player.
Or a CD.
Or a CD.
MP3. anyway, I think his point is that, you know, these very richly rated success stories run the risk of exactly what you say there, Simon, that someone comes along and they're no longer the next big thing.
I mean, I remember going back when I was starting out at the IC, this is back in 2000, and a retail writer at the time was doing Matalan's results, and it was on the edge of the FTSE 100. We looked at them, it was 50 times earnings.
Matalan. Wow.
And this is a retailer, and we know with retailers, one bad seasonal blip causes profit warning and massacre of the share price. And we just agreed, no, this is too punchy, and put on a sell. And that, you know, that was the high point for Matalan. And my point is, I get very wary with retailers when they get to punchy ratings.
Ted Baker, bit of a curveball I've just chucked you there. Because that one seems to live up to its punchy rating time after time after time after time.
I'd have to have a look at it. I haven't looked at it for a couple of years, John, because I've been focused on the small caps, and it's a lot bigger. It's outside my remit.
Yeah, but it's pretty much a small cap when I first tipped it. I think we might have even had a row about that.
But there will be exceptions to it, of course. But I'm just quite wary of buying retail stocks on high 20s, 30s forward earnings multiples.
I think you're quite right. And as Beowulf mentions this week, Burberry is a classic example of you know, a very punchily rated share that the shine has come off. And it happens. All right, we're going to get kicked out of the studio.
We are.
I can see them hovering. So thank you, Simon. Thank you, Bradley. Good discussion. We could go on for ages. But sadly, time is against us. Lots more in the magazine this week. I mean, it's a huge feature, the AIM 100. So huge, in fact, we have to run it over 2 weeks. So there's plenty more in the magazine. Chris Dillo has updated his No Thought portfolio. His momentum has not done so well. I mean, this is very unusual. Value's actually been having a good run recently, which is quite interesting. You're a value man, Simon.
Just for the readers, I've produced a list of all the 160 stock recommendations I've made in the first 16 weeks of this year.
Haven't you?
160, John.
Do you sleep?
I do try sometimes on a Sunday.
Okay.
But the point is that a lot of those have done well, and the ones that have done best are the value orientated strategies. And that's telling you something about the market generally.
Okay. Not so many results this week. Getting to that kind of quieter time of year, which is nice, which is why we fill our days with other stuff like the AIM 100. Lots in the funds personal finance section. ETF celebrating their 16th anniversary, and Kate Beely, who's our ETF specialist, has done a lovely podcast around that. So have a listen to that as well after you've obviously listened to this one. And they'll be doing their usual podcast tomorrow. Lots of comments, the usual tips, and there's a few more stories in the news section that we didn't talk about today. Anyway, AIM 100, part one, £4.70, all good news agents, and we'll be back again next week when we'll talk about AIM part two. So thank you very much. Thank you, everybody. See you later. Bye-bye.